presented by Baseball Prospectus's BP Bronx. I'm your host, EJ Fagan, and tonight I am joined by Jim Carruthers.
Hey, EJ.
And Scott Moss.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Doing great, great. So we recorded a special episode yesterday. We talked a little bit about the politics of baseball and the Yankees and some diversity issues and those types of things. That was a bonus episode, since I know that most of you come here to listen to us talk about baseball. But we got some really good feedback on that episode already in just the day since I posted it. And so we probably will do another episode on some other things in the near future. Keep a lookout for that. But again, that will be a bonus episode. That won't supplant any of our wonderful baseball analysis. It's been an interesting couple of weeks. We have Gleyber Torres, or a couple of days. Gleyber Torres just hit his third home run in 2 days. We're currently recording this in the fourth inning against the Rangers. So if he hits another home run, we won't cover that. Domingo Germán is having his second not so great start in a row. We might be able to talk about that a little bit. But we're going to focus mostly today on Gleyber Torres. Gleyber Torres is having, I think, an underrated elite season. Coming into today, he was batting .321, .389, .571. Again, he hit another home run, so he's probably now slugging above .600 and may have an OPS near 1,000, which is pretty nuts. He has been the second best rookie player in Major League Baseball this year. He's tied with a bunch of people, but the only player that's been clearly better has been Shohei Ohtani. So that's pretty impressive. He has been the best rookie second baseman probably ever going into this far into the season. And so all really good news. So I want to ask you guys, why does it not – is it just me, or does it not seem to you that Gleyber Torres is flying under the radar a little bit? Jim, why don't you go first?
I think it's going to a new level. Certainly, when you hit, you know, three homers in 2 days, it's going to amp up. And you know, he was very highly touted. We were talking about a top five prospect on everybody's list. So he got press. I think it's not reaching hysteria the way that Aaron Judge did last year. And I think it doesn't merit it yet. I think Gleyber right now, you know, when he first came up, he was really mainly a contact hitter. The power has turned on in the last 2 weeks, no argument about that. But if you compare, you know, his last month, he's slugging in the 600 range. Aaron Judge's first month when he came on last year, he slugged 750 in March and April. That's what initiates the hysteria. I think he's a very solid baseball player all around, but I think it's the appropriate amount of hype. Because he's not doing, you know, at his position, he's hitting very well and for a lot of power. But there are, you know, on the left side of the infield, rookie comps for him in recent memory that make you, he's not absurd in the way that, you know, Judge or Sanchez have been for Yankees recently.
Well, I mean, so I'd like to explore some of those comps for a second. Compare 21-year-old Gleyber Torres to 21-year-old Manny Machado. Is Gleyber Torres better or worse than 21-year-old Manny Machado?
I mean, right now he's better because he's on a hot streak. But people haven't figured out how to pitch him yet. I think Machado's upside, from what I remember as a 20-year-old, was projected a little higher than Gleyber's. I think Gleyber projects, a lot of scouts have him as like a 25 home run type player. And right now he's obviously more than that. But Gleyber's also playing second base. Machado's on the left side of the infield where there's inherently, you know, a little bit more perceived value, especially with Machado originally being, you know, cast as a shortstop. From what I've seen, I think Gleyber's an excellent second baseman, but I think if he was playing on shortstop side, he might be getting a little more exposed than he is on the right side of the infield.
Scott, how good is Gleyber Torres?
He's pretty good. Okay, so I read an article saying, it's titled Gleyber Torres is having one of the best rookie second base seasons ever, and I thought, oh, I bet they did a cool play index type search, but then it ended up being a weird search, which was of rookie second baseman, and it included stupid examples like Jimmy Wood, who was a 27-year-old rookie in 1871,
and Cupid Childs, come on, great
Cupid Childs. Al Reach. By the way, 1871 was a hell of a year for second base rookies because there are two of them, right? Like, you know, I can't believe I don't remember Al Reach or Jimmy. Well, anyhow, so
I remember that back in the day, second base used to be the premium defensive position? Is that's like a fact in my head? Maybe it was first base used to be the premium defensive position.
I think first base, maybe all the infield ones, but first base because in the dead ball era, there were just a lot more ground balls and lower scoring. So, and frankly, I also assume that if you have crappier fielding, there's more of a premium on first base. I know this from coaching my kids' Little League team, where the biggest delta in fielding among Little League teams is who has someone at first base who can catch the crappy throws and whatnot. So anyhow, so I did the play index search that I thought that article was going to do, which is the remarkable thing about Gleyber Torres isn't he's a second baseman. It's that he's really, really young and playing really, really well. So I did what I thought was the more obvious search, which is rookies at most age 21 who were really good hitters. Now, really good hitters is a big thing. I just picked out of the top of my head half a season, so 300 plate appearances, of a 125 OPS plus or better. That's not blowing the doors off the place. It's only half a season. 125 OPS plus is good, but you're not an MVP. But I wanted to see if there are 800 people with that, if there are four. So, lightning round guess for you guys. How often does a rookie use a most 21 play at least half a season with a 125 OPS plus?
Five times ever.
Jim?
I'll take the under. I'll take the under on that.
Okay, maybe I oversold. Maybe I oversold how rare it is because it's once every 4 years. So it's not unheard of. It's not unheard of. But because, you know, when you think about it, there's usually a pretty good rookie who beats that. And sometimes he's 20 or 21. Okay, but here's the amazing thing. So if anything, I was with you guys. It was more frequent than I thought. But holy hell, are these guys good. The median career WAR of these guys is 41. That's incredibly high, right? That's not all Hall of Famers, but a third of them are basically Hall of Famers. And I say basically only because Mike Trout and Albert Pujols are two of them, and others include Carlos Correa and Cody Bellinger. So the median guy, if you have a half season of an OPS plus of 125 that young, the over-under on your career WAR is 41. That's really, really good. That's borderline, you're not really a Hall of Famer, but you had a heck of a career. And get this, out of the 17 guys since World War II, only three of them failed to have 30 career WAR. So it's what's amazing about Gleyber's season is that almost everybody who does this goes on to have a really long and either Hall of Fame or near Hall of Fame career.
And you set the lower threshold at 125 OPS plus, right?
Yeah, not even killing it, you know, if you set it higher.
He has a 154 OPS plus, right?
Right.
So he's considerably better than that.
Right, so, you know, if you assume, basically in a sense, he could have like a 120 the rest of the season, and it gets better. I just changed it to 133, so 33% better. Then the list becomes like just ungodly good. It's Trout, Pujols, Daryl Strawberry, Tim Raines, Daryl Porter, Frank Robinson, and then like two guys who stunk. But, you know, if you set the level at 130, 133, then you're really talking mostly Hall of Famers who did this.
And I think that, you know, the other thing to support that evidence is that Gleyber Torres was a top prospect in baseball. I mean, before he had a freak injury, he was considered one of the very best players in the minor leagues, and now he's considered one of the very best young players in the major leagues. And I brought up Manny Machado because I think he's an interesting comp. I'm with Jim that I think that the defensive value there is just like immeasurable. Like Manny Machado, when he was really young, was, you know, a plus 2 to 4 win player on defense alone. He was just that good when he first came up as a third baseman. And Gleyber Torres, I think, is pretty good. Like, I've been impressed by him. I suspect he will put up plus defensive numbers at second base, but he's not going to put up, you know, 4 wins. That's just ridiculous. But Manny Machado, like, wasn't that great of a hitter at 21. This is his third season in the majors. He had 278, 324, 531. I mean, the season before, when he was 20, he had an OPS plus of 100. You know, the season after, his big breakout season when he was 22, he had an OPS plus of 132, right? Nothing, like, he was, Manny, Gleyber Torres is looking like more even Carlos Correa than Manny Machado on offense. And that's nuts. Like, that is amazing. And it doesn't feel, it just, I don't know, it doesn't feel to me in my, like, my, you know, taking my finger in the zeitgeist of Yankee fandom, which is basically the Twitter feed of our Twitter account, it doesn't feel like Yankee fans are celebrating. Maybe because Aaron Judge and Gary Sanchez and Luis Severino kind of like overshadow Gleyber Torres a little bit at the moment, and he's still kind of batting ninth, and it still feels like he hasn't been up that long. But he's kind of been up for a while at this point, and he still has a 1,000 OPS plus.
Yeah, just to jump into one more aspect of my search, I did another variant to compare. So is it few guys or many guys, or am I just finding that rookie seasons are, when they're good, predictive of a good career? So he did the same search for guys who are 24 or 25 as a rookie. And the answer there is that it's much, much more common. It's about one a year. Guys who are 20, every year there's a guy who's 24 or 25 who has that good OPS plus 125 in half a season. And it includes names like Matt Adams, Lucas Duda, Hunter Pence, Johnny Gomes, Jason Bay, Rusty Greer, Kevin Moss, Hal Morris. It isn't as remarkable. And just to give you another example from last year, Ryan Schimpf met this criteria half season, almost exactly, of he had a 132 OPS plus, but he was 28 in 2016. He had 217 with 20 home runs. And he hasn't been heard from since, and I think he was just released by a second team or something. And I read something about this by some, it was either Bill James many years ago or someone more recent on Prospectus or something, saying that what's remarkable about having a season this young is it means that you adjusted to new levels amazingly quickly at like five different levels. And as new things came at you, you just adjusted instantly to harder pitches, better command, four pitches, curveballs, guys who could find the weakness, better scouting on you, whatnot. So there's something about making it, even as an adequate player by 20 or 21, that means you're well on the way to being a great.
So now that the Yankees have Gleyber Torres on their baseball team, and they now have had Gary Sanchez come up recently, they have had Aaron Judge come up recently, they've had Luis Severino come up, all become All-Stars. What are, I don't know how to ask this. At what point is Gleyber Torres better than any of those guys? Maybe not Aaron Judge, but I'm like, he's 21 years old. Those other guys are kind of old. They're kind of getting a little bit, they're all in their kind of mid-20s. You know, they're in their prime right now. I'm wondering, like, in my head, I'm trying to say, like, would I trade Gary Sanchez for Gleyber Torres at this point? I might take the Torres side of that trade. I don't know. What about you guys?
Oh, my gosh. I think you'd be crazy. I mean, I think, so I can appreciate, you know, what Gleyber's doing is incredible. But for perspective, if you look at, like, you know, so right now he's in 25 games, he's slugging, you know, 570. If you go back to Robbie Cano's rookie year when he was 22, in his second 25, he was slugging 530. So, we've had this type of production in groups from rookie second baseman in the past. Robbie Cano is obviously a very good player. But the people that you're comparing him to on the current roster are spectacular and generational. I mean, I think I sincerely think that Gary Sanchez as a hitter has the ability from the right side to do at the catcher position, you know, things that, you know, similar to Manny Ramirez. I think he's a very, very difficult hitter to pitch on the right side with power to every field. And Aaron Judge is going to get a movie written about him someday with the stuff that he can do on the baseball field.
A video game.
Yeah, I mean, he's the natural. And I know he's more flawed, but I think that makes him more interesting. And his ability for the spectacular is much more than what Gleyber can do. Now, Gleyber, I think, is a very solid player. Gleyber, his valleys are much lower than either one of those players. But I also think he benefits from having both those players in the same lineup. They're probably extremely hesitant to throw him a lot of breaking stuff when they know Judge is in the two hole, you know, waiting behind him, and Gleyber's rocking a 400 on base. So you got to try to let him get himself out rather than put him on for Aaron Judge and then Giancarlo Stanton. There's no favors there. And I think what we've seen from him, you know, in the last 15 years for rookie second baseman, we've seen this before. I think he's very similar to what Robbie did when he came up. He's a year younger, more range, but I don't think his arm is as good as Robbie's. And Robbie's a great thing, but he's not Aaron Judge or Sanchez.
Where should Gleyber Torres bat in the lineup, Scott?
That's a good question. It depends on whether his batting on base is high, but I think if he stays even in remotely in the ballpark of this, I think he's the leadoff hitter because he gets on base. I think the two least likely things to stay as high, the least likely thing to stay as high as it is the raw power. He has 6 home runs and 3 doubles, which that's an unusual ratio too. You don't often see guys with 36 home runs and 18 doubles or something. So it tells me that maybe a couple more went out than you'd expect. So if, as they expect, he's more like a 20 home run guy than a 30-35, and he gets on base, he was a 389 on base. You know, the Yankees, for a great offense, they don't have a really great leadoff hitter by the standard of who can get on base when you have such great hitters behind you. So I think I want to see a little more. But just back to the other point you mentioned about, you know, would you take him over Sanchez? I take Sanchez. And I think one thing I'll say, though, is that we are all appropriately excited about Gleyber, but my search assumed that he does this for half a year. He has 100 plate appearances as of today. They should have a cake for him or something. I redid my search for 21 or younger year old guys who have 100 plate appearances that good. That's a much longer list. There are 34 guys. It includes such non-luminaries as Brett Laurie, Sal Perez, Jeff Francoeur, Ben Grieve, Travis Fryman, Tom Brunansky. So it's still a good list, but I think there is a big difference between who can do this for 100 plate appearances and who can do this for half a season or more. So I think that I'm super excited. I think things bode really well for him. But as far as penciling him in for the next 10 years or deciding that I would rather have him over guys in their mid-late 20s who are established, you know, get back to me in August.
You guys are not nearly enthusiastic enough. I am. I think Gleyber Torres is our Manny Machado. He is our Carlos Correa. And because he is so young, like, I'm excited for the possibility that he could be a Yankee for the next decade in his prime, just winning World Series left and right, killing it. And I'm just delayed for this to happen. Now I'm going to read out his X stats. So his X WOBA, X slugging, X batting average from StatCast. He has an expected batting average of .311, which is actually lower than the batting average on balls. His actual batting average, .321. He has a higher expected slugging percentage than his actual slugging percentage, .605. And he has, before the beginning of this game, so this has gone up in this game, he has an ex-WOBA of .414, which is better than what he's put up on the field. I think that his quality of contact early in the season was actually bad, and he was getting lucky.
Yeah.
Over the last 3 weeks, he's slugging like .750, and the quality of contact suggests that that's not an aberration. I think what we're witnessing is the classic, like, high hit tool player, not the classic, the recent innovation in baseball where you have a high hit tool, middle infield, super athletic guy who comes to the majors, enjoys the juice ball, puts some muscle on, starts swinging for the fences, and hits 35 to 40 home runs. I mean, I think he's Francisco Lindor in that sense. Or, I mean, Machado's on pace to hit about 50 this year. Like that kind of player is, I think, what we could be looking at. And I would be shocked if he finishes at only 20 home runs this season, barring an injury at this point.
Yeah, I agree, basically, but I'll say caution about the sample size, which is that I was surprised his ex-WOBA was that high in the StatCast charts because I looked it up 2 days ago when I added him to my fantasy team. And his ex-WOBA then, he was around 100 out of 250 guys with that many plate appearances or something. It wasn't great, so it was a little biting my nails. And what you're seeing is that after 3 home runs the past couple of days, suddenly he jumps through the roof. But that's to say he's had few enough plate appearances that if you give him a slump of 4 games, he drops back down to, you know, much lower. So I don't think I'm much less excited than you, but maybe I'm a little less confident that, you know, he isn't going to have the slump of a week that'll bring him back down to earth.
And he's doing this against the Royals and the Rangers too. I mean, that, to your point about recent sample size, yeah, I mean, he roughed up Bartolo Colon. I think he got Duffy the other day. I mean, he's not doing this against the pitching that he's seen on the AL East or that he'll see against Boston. So I agree that, you know, until he gets through a full rotation in the AL, it's tough to, you know, go out and buy a jersey at this point. But I can understand. I definitely appreciate the argument. I mean, there's definitely reasons to be excited about him. I just think he's closer to Robbie. You know, when we look back at this whole season, maybe he's Robbie with more power.
Range. I'll take it, right? You know.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So I think there's this interesting dilemma that we kind of alluded to, that once the Yankees decide to bring him up toward the top of the lineup, and I assume it's coming fairly soon, the Yankees are basically all right-handed hitters. Gary Sanchez, righty, Giancarlo Stanton, Aaron Judge, and Gleyber Torres, right? Probably your top four hitters are all right-handed. And that's going to pose a problem for them. It may not pose as much of a problem for them if Greg Bird comes back healthy. Greg Bird is currently rehabbing in games. I saw a video of a home run that he hit. He certainly looked healthy hitting that home run. He probably will be back up, what I think like this weekend or so is kind of what we're looking at, so soon. So the question I want to ask you guys, and I'll go, we'll go Jim first. Once Greg Bird comes back, what's the lineup change? What's the roster decision that you make to make space for Greg Bird? And is Greg Bird at that point a platoon player to you, or is he a mostly every day, maybe sitting occasionally player?
I'd probably platoon him a little bit, mainly because there's a positional conflict with Austin, who I'm really high on. And I think, honestly, you probably move Didi down further. Didi probably goes to the 6 or 7 hole, and Bird becomes your 4 or 5 guy to either break up or protect Sanchez when you're willing to play him. But I think they can afford to be snobby about when they play him, because if there's a good lefty on the mound, I mean, Bird's got a weird platoon split because he does hit lefties better. He hits lefties pretty well. But the problem is Austin mashes lefties. So I don't think there's any reason to punish Austin for that. And I think that Bird could be well suited to break up the Sanchez Stanton combo in the lineup. That's probably where I would target.
Scott, what do you think?
Yeah, I think exactly the same thing. I mean, he doesn't have a discernible platoon split, and they need a lefty in the lineup. So even if a lefty starts, you know, starters go 5 innings on average these days. So you still want him in there to break up the righty, 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 righty situation. So even if you start Austin, I figure you have Bird pinch hitting at some point when they put in the righty reliever for, you know, Judge, Stanton, Sanchez, Austin, etc. So, yeah, I think that in the beginning, it'd be justifiable to ease him in a little bit. But that's to say that I think maybe you keep a platoon going in the short run and you see if that sort of takes care of itself. Because if Greg Bird looks like Greg Bird, then he's a guy you pencil in as a guy who, frankly, is one of the best hitters on most teams. It's only on the Yankees that he's like a 4th best hitter in the lineup. So if he looks like Greg Bird, he's not a guy you platoon in the long run. If he's going to be a guy who hits, you know, 270 with a lot of walks and 30 home runs as the lefty hitter, you need to see if he's that guy. I think platooning him on a permanent basis would probably be a mistake.
I'm with you guys. I think Neil Walker is the obvious pick. I think at some point we have to ask ourselves, like, what are we expecting out of Neil Walker? And I think it's fairly clear that at least one of Tyler Austin or Greg Bird is kind of the short-term to medium-term answer at first base. And then, you know, with Gleyber Torres pitching playing so well, and Miguel Andujar playing pretty well, you know, there's just no scenario where it seems to me like Neil Walker is really all that useful, barring an injury. And so I think that's kind of the obvious choice. Another lineup decision the Yankees are going to have to make soon. I've been kind of delaying on this while his start has been finishing, but Domingo Germán just had a really bad start. He pitched 3 2/3 innings against the Texas Rangers. He gave up 6 runs, 6 strikeouts, 3 walks. This is coming off another start 5 days ago where he was also not very good, or I guess it was more than that because of the rain out. How many more starts does Domingo Germán get? Does he get just one more start before you start looking at other options? I don't know who goes next. Jim?
I'd consider moving him now. I just think, you know, when we talked about this after his good start against Cleveland, I think he's got, as opposed to some of these other really good prospects, he's got some things that he needs to work on if they want him to be a starter long term. I would send him down to the minors with the sole purpose of just repeating his delivery on the lower half. I know I dork out on the mechanics a little bit, but his delivery is not the same pitch to pitch. And I think that's why he struggles with his location. He gets pounded. I mean, he should get sent down for giving up a home run to Jurickson Profar today. That's not okay. And it's okay to give up singles and doubles to him, but you can't give up a home run to center. And so I think there's better options in the minors right now between your boy Josh Rogers or or whoever.
Hashtag free Josh Rogers.
Free him. I would. But he's got mechanical things he's got to sort out that I think he could benefit from some quality time in Scranton or Trenton.
Scott, what do you think? So one more start, zero more starts. What's your plan for Domingo Germán?
I wouldn't say zero. I'd probably give him a medium leash. Someone on the logic of what Jim said, which is that he does seem like he has kinks to work out. But this will be his second bad start. And I feel like that's old Yankees that I grew up with in the late 80s and early 90s, where they just, you're dead to them if you have two bad starts or something. And granted, there are reasons to think he's imperfect, but so are most rookies. So he has enough talent. In other words, he's enough talent that he could be a serviceable fifth starter and better than their other alternatives, even if he's somewhat flawed. In other words, flawed version of Domingo Germán that's only performing at two-thirds of his potential could be better than their other alternatives, because after all, this is a team with a lot of minor league talent, including pitching talent. They're a little light on guys who are definitely ready now, because Chance Adams looked like he would be, but he took a step back, not forward in his command. And then you have guys like Sheffield and Domingo Acevedo, who are not 100% of there.
Josh Rogers.
Josh, yeah.
I'm bringing him up. He's going to come up a lot.
Have you mentioned him before? Yeah, so I mean, he's okay, but you know, given that he's a guy who has the narrow margin for error on the command and control, he looks good so far, but he hasn't spent that much time at AAA. In other words, he and Sheffield could be a better option after the All-Star break, maybe, when you believe that they're really there, but maybe not there yet.
All right, so last but not least, so the Yankees are about to have an embarrassment of riches. We've kind of talked about this a little bit, at the hitting position. So we're going to go back to a bunch of hitting positions. You have first base, DH, DH when one of Judge or Stanton is not occupying it, center field, left field, second base, third base, so lots of positions. And the Yankees have the following players competing for playing time at those positions. Greg Bird, Gleyber Torres, Miguel Andujar, Neil Walker, Brandon Drury, Aaron Hicks, Brett Gardner, Tyler Austin, Ronald Torres, and Clint Frazier. A lot of players. There's five spots. So what I want to ask is, among the collective playing time for that group, how much playing time should go to each player? And so what I want to do here is I want to take each player and basically start with 100%, so meaning they're in the lineup every day, and you know, go down to 0%, meaning they're in the minors. I want you guys to give me a number somewhere in that range. So let's talk about Greg Bird. So we've already kind of alluded to this. Greg Bird comes back. How often does Greg Bird play, Jim?
I got him at 60% on first and 30% at DH.
So he's in the lineup basically every day, except, you know, maybe one rest day every 2 weeks.
Yeah, that's what I would do with him.
All right, but Scott. We're going to lightning through these.
So. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah,
I would play him every day, but my prediction, if that's what we're doing, is I think he plays about 5/6 of the time, meaning that he'll play against some but not all lefties, sort of to ease him in, but then to give it bats and against, say, Chris Sale to someone like Tyler Austin instead.
I think I'm putting him down for playing just against righties. So that's, I don't know how often righties come up, but about, what, 70% of the time?
Yeah.
So that's my plan right there. I think Tyler Austin is a better player against lefties at this point. Greg Bird can prove me wrong, but for now, Tyler Austin is playing well enough. I don't think you can sit him. Number two, Gleyber Torres. Scott.
I think 100%. And by that, I mean, not that he gets 0 days off, but he's an everyday player. They might give him off every now and then a day game after a night game, but he's basically a full-time player.
All right, Jim?
I got him at 92, so that's an off day every other week.
All right, there we go. Yeah, so full-time player, maybe because he's young, you give him a little more off days than the average veteran, but he's basically a full-time player. Miguel Andujar, Jim?
I would start him a lot. I think he needs to be at third base 70% of the time.
All right, and who's the other 30% in that mental model of yours?
I actually love it. Neil Walker. I loved what he did yesterday. Neil Walker is the super platoon. I would like him playing. You know, that's basically one or two starts a week at third base when you're facing a tough righty.
All right, Scott, what about you?
I would play him as much as possible until he plays himself out, but my prediction would be that he gets about 60% of the playing time, which is not a real number I'm making up. I'm just saying he probably gets most of the time, but somewhere more than half, he'll be benched for more than just platooning, I think, once they believe that Drury's healthy. They seem to love him. And then against what I would do, they probably will rotate Neil Walker and or Ronald Torres in there for reasons unclear to me.
Yeah, I'm with you there. Yeah, I think the difficult thing with Brandon Drury is that he's a righty.
Yeah.
As is Miguel Andujar. So, you know, you're pretty much rotating him in just kind of for the rest days. But I'm with you. But it doesn't feel like Andujar is going to be the guy every single day. I kind of wish they had a better left-handed, someone from the left-hand side of the plate. I forget about Neil Walker's splits. Does Neil Walker beat righties better than lefties?
He's weird, but he is hot lately. So I think his numbers lately have gotten better, but he's actually better against lefties right now.
He's a lot like Drury in that, you know, the reason he has very little split, so he's good to platoon with a righty with a normal split.
Can we,
all right, so
real quick on Andujar.
We're going to keep plowing through this.
Oh, okay.
Because next up we have Brandon Drury. So, Jim, what do you think about Brandon Drury?
Zero. I think he's in the minors unless barring injury, I don't bring him up.
Scott?
I'm going to go with a third, 33%, just because they seem to love him so much, or at least want to give him a shot. So I suspect that they're going to find a way to rotate him around, and he may be more like super sub second and third, and they'll find ways to either, you know, give him some time at third or put him at second for the rare day off for Torres, or move Torres to shortstop every now and then as they get more confident that Torres is comfortable and not a fragile psyche or needing to learn a lot. They might say he's the guy to give DD some rest. At least that's what I would try.
All right, moving on. Aaron Hicks, Jim.
85% in center off the other times. He breaks down a lot, and he has played every day for a while. So I think he needs some off time in center.
All right, and then Brett Gardner gets the remainder?
Unfortunately, this is the only thing I don't like about the Oakland trade last year is that we lost Dustin Fowler. But yeah, Brett Gardner stays up. I got him 15% in center and 35% left.
All right, Scott?
I basically agree. I'd say I bet he plays about 5/6 of the time if he's healthy, but there's only about a 50% chance he's healthy all the time. So if I were to sort of rolling average, weighted average, the odds that Hicks is out for the season in an iron lung or misses a month here and there, I'd say my weighted average would probably be that he plays about half the games the rest of the season.
All right, Brett Gardner. Scott, you go first.
I would say I bet you that eventually he's going to be playing a bit under half, I'll say. It's a little out on a limb, I think. But I think that, look, they already have the present. They benched Ellsbury a lot, and he's just looking so weak right now. And if they had to play him all the time, he's still fine. He's not killing the team. I mean, for whatever reason, I feel like Brett Gardner breaks WAR for some reason. He still looks amazing and all in the numbers, but I think that he just looks slower both with his bat and with his speed. So I just think that with the embarrassment of riches, as long as Hicks is healthy, and I bet you Frazier gets a little time, I bet he guards down to halftime or a little less even.
All right, breaking news. Aaron Boone is currently arguing with the home plate umpire. It looks like over the terrible strike zone that we've seen tonight against the Rangers, because Gary Sanchez just had yet another strike, which was clearly not a strike called upon him. But looks like he made his peace, yelled at him, and is walking back to the bench and still in the game. So I have it on mute. I don't know what's actually happening, but that has been your breaking news update for the podcast. moving up to, I think, a more interesting one, Tyler Austin. Jim, what is Tyler Austin's playing time look like the rest of this season?
I give him 40% at first base, and I give him 15 at DH. So he's playing every other day, basically, a little more than that.
All right, so against both lefties and righties, though probably more against lefties, but you'd still put him in there against righties a bit.
Yeah, every lefty he's got to play, and especially against David Price. And for some reason, what's his face in Boston? And I think he can actually hit righties too. So there's some benefit to giving him some time.
All right, Scott.
I would say about 25%, but what I really think is that he plays against most of the lefties at first, then the rest of the lefties at DH. So that's probably, you know, 25%. But I think in addition, I bet you he gets a lot of pinch hit time. He'll probably be their go-to pinch hitter, just because if they ever need to, not that they pinch it as much as an NL team, but I think they'll, in a way, do that to find time for him every now and then. Let's say if Torres is playing or what have you. So, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if they just find ways to get him in, DH, pinch it occasionally, et cetera.
Yeah, I mean, I think Gardner and Austin, I think, are an interesting duo because although their positions don't overlap, their roster positions kind of do, right? So Brett Gardner, I think, probably shouldn't play ever against lefties. But at this point, I'm not sure if against righties, if it's not the right decision to play Brett Gardner. I kind of haven't settled it in my head, because what you're talking about is Brett Gardner would play the field, and then, you know, Judge or Stanton would DH in that case, which means that Tyler Austin goes to the bench against these right-handed pitchers. This is assuming Greg Bird is playing first base against the lefties. And in that scenario, you kind of have to ask, like, okay, is the marginal benefit of going from Gardner to Tyler Austin's, you know, hitting ability against righties going to make a difference enough to offset the defensive hit that you take by, instead of Gardner playing left field, you get Giancarlo Stanton playing left field? And at this point, I think it makes sense for Gardner to play against most righties. So I'm going with like a 60% at this point. Though, you know, I'm betting on a little bit of Brett Gardner recovery if he doesn't play every day. But I think that is the most interesting position battle kind of this group. Do you guys think there anything else is more interesting than that? Or?
Well, I think that one interesting thing about Gardner is how just unplayable he's become against lefties. He always had your standard split. So I just looked it up. In 2016, he was 100 OPS better against righties. Sure, that's normal. In 2017, the bus drove off the cliff. He OPS 590 against lefties. It's 250 lower. And this year, his OPS is 475 against lefties. I mean, he's just never see a lefty pitcher again. He's not seeing many now, but I hadn't realized that he'd gotten that bad.
Yeah, I think you just got to find some at-bats for him at center field. I agree with him. He's got to play a little more against righties. But I'm really worried. Hicks has not demonstrated that he can play 140 games without something breaking. So I just think that he needs, even though he's playing better right now, I think he needs a day now and then. So I'd find some bats for him as a righty in center field and let Hicks take a day off.
All right, so let's actually put a pin in that for a second. Can we all agree Ronald Torre is zero? Good.
Can Ronald Torre, as much discussion
as he deserves.
Yes.
No, I'm sorry. I'm sure he's a very nice person. He does the whole camera thing. It's great. Clint Frazier is the other option we have right here. And given the discussion that we are having right now, it sounds like the Yankees could probably use another outfielder on their roster, specifically a right-handed hitting outfielder who can play against lefties. So let's assume that there's a spot for Clint Frazier in the major leagues. When there is a spot and he is called up, how much playing time would you guys give Clint Frazier, Scott?
I would give him as much as you can mathematically accomplish, basically taking it out of Gardner and Hicks's time and just rotating guys around. You know, maybe it comes a bit out of Austin's time in the end, to the extent that Austin, if he's going to get more than 15% of the time, it's going to have to be at DH or 20%. So in the end, DH time for Austin comes out of some outfielder. My tirade about Clint Frazier was this, okay? He's clearly a major league quality hitter, I think. He's now hitting 373 with four home runs in not many at-bats in the minors. He's, you know, just clearly ready at the bat. Sure, he might still have growing pains with the strikeouts, but he's as ready as he's going to be with the bat. As long as he's marinating in AAA just because you don't have room, why not let him play a little more center field? Now, to my surprise, the Yankees are. Of his 13 games at AAA, he's played four of them in center field. So they're giving a bit of a try there. His range looks okay so far. It's only four games. But, you know, if it's me, he has nothing more to learn with the bat at AAA. If he's anything more to learn, the bat is in the majors. Why not have him play center field any day to see if he's baseline passably playable, which he may not be. Maybe it's likely he's not. But, heck, why not give it a shot? Because if he is, on the 1-in-4 chance he's a playable center fielder, boy, is that a heck of an outfield and solves a lot of your problems.
Jim, would you have Clint Frazier? Would Clint Frazier solve your problem at center field?
I don't know if he can defensively get it done there. He looked pretty lost last year when he was up, just playing a left. But I think he's, you know, he's young and he's fresh. And I agree that his bat is good. And he is a guy that, you know, scouts had him at like a 55 overall grade. So he's somebody that you need to get up at some point. You just need to carve more at-bats out of Gardner probably. In that scenario, and he's going to get some time at DH, you know, which may or may not be the best thing for an up-and-coming player.
All right. Well, with that, we are going long. We are almost at 40 minutes. Thank you guys for joining me. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Again, as I mentioned last episode, please leave a review and or rating on iTunes to help us out a little bit. And I will be reading any new reviews that people post, 5-star reviews only, that people post within reason on iTunes next week on air. Thank you, everybody, for listening. This has been your Bronx Beat Podcast.